Hello, and thank you for joining me back on Geezers of Gear here from LDI. It's been a blast so far, and of course we just had Werner on from ZackTrack, which was pretty interesting. I tried so hard to stump him, and I just couldn't. I couldn't figure out how to break the thing, so all good. Anyways, so I'm kind of closing the day out here with a pretty fun group of guys. And one of my favorite designers out there. I read his book. I don't really read designer books, and I read your book, probably because it was written for, you know, simple people like myself, I guess. And
by a simple person.
So no, I mean it was a great book. I thought it was excellent. I loved the direction that you went in the book. Like I liked, you know, the stuff about how to live on a bus, you know, and not piss people off kind of thing. So it was just a really practical book, and I don't know how you're doing with it. I know it's pretty hard to make a living selling books right now. But so anyways, I have Seth Jackson and Nathan from Darkroom Creative. Darkroom Creative. So I've never called you by your company name, so I had to think there for a second. What's his company called? Darkroom. So, you know, thank you guys first, because sure. I know you've been busy. You've been on panels and all kinds of things all day today. And
it's LDI. It's what you do.
It is, yeah. So, I mean, first, LDI, like, what do you think? You know, have you enjoyed this show? Do you think it's okay?
Yeah, I've loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, LDI, I don't know how other people feel about it. I get a little romantic about the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my 30th year of coming to these.
Wow.
So my first one was in Reno in 92. And I've always just, I mean, as a college student, I couldn't believe everything that I could see and touch. And
yeah.
As I got older, the industry connections. And now it's even hard to get through the floor to see all the products because I keep running into these people I only see once a year in person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, and once every 2 years now.
Now every 2 years, you know, it's I always just have a really great time.
Yeah.
And I love being a part of all the different committees and panels. And
yeah, yeah.
And when from that standpoint, it was just really phenomenally nice to just see everyone again.
Yeah.
In person.
Yeah. In person.
Yeah. No, I've obviously talked to a bunch of people today about this show, and I've talked to people out on the show floor and stuff about my feelings about it. I was very vocal prior to the show on my like weekly Zooms and stuff. Mm-hmm. I felt like this show really needed to happen for our industry, for people in our industry. It was very important that this show went on. So I'm thrilled that it's going as well as it is. There's more people here than I expected to see. It's got a better vibe than I expected to see. I didn't want to think that it was going to be a depressing show, but I kind of thought it might be a little bit depressing. It's been excellent. Like, bravo to them. Bravo to all of us for being here.
Yeah.
Bravo to the exhibitors for spending the money to be here. It is expensive. You know, like, I remember talking to one of them. I won't mention the name. It'll be pretty obvious and easy to figure out. But he said, you know, we're spending $500,000 or $600,000 to be at this show. It's tough when you're coming out of COVID, you know, and you got all these other problems with shipping costs are way
up. All your parts are in Long Beach Harbor.
All your parts are sitting out on the ocean in boats. And, you know, it's tough to go to your board of directors and say, hey, folks, we still need to spend this $500,000 or $600,000 on this trade show. And it's like, what? Why are you So, you know, I know it wasn't easy for these guys to come, and I appreciate them being here. And when I was talking with you earlier today, Howard said something that was pretty interesting. He said, out of all the LDIs I've been to, which I think is a lot of them, this is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty cool. I don't know that I agree with that. There's not quite enough from the exhibitor standpoint for me. But I think it's an excellent show.
Yeah.
And I think there's things that they've done that are going to carry forward, you know, like having the talks on the show floor.
That's great.
Love that.
Yes.
Yeah. You just wander in, wander out.
Yeah. But I love that. Like, I mean, you know, yesterday at one point I was sitting at the Circle Bar, as you do, and I'm like, wait, is that Jeff Ravitz talking right now? Like, I can hear Jeff Ravitz's voice, you know? And I turn around and there's Jeff doing this talk, and I sat there and had a beer and listened to Jeff Ravitz. So,
worst ways to spend a day.
It was pretty fun. It was pretty fun. So, you know, one of the big reasons I wanted to have you guys on is Darkroom and yourself, Seth, you were from most of the people I know anyways, I think you were one of the very first to go out and do a tour quite successfully. And, so I'm interested, A, in hearing a little bit about that, but also you've been very busy, not just that one tour. You're doing all kinds of other things as well. And so I don't know if you just had better foresight than other people or better clients than other people or were more prepared or what, but you guys just seem to kind of gear up a little quicker than a lot of others did.
There was a couple of things going on, and Nate can expand on this too, but what happened was we basically started our company 6 months before the pandemic, somewhere in that vein. We got one tour out the door, and we were starting to dig in on all these other ones for Doobie Brothers and Toby Keith.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it all stopped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I even think that the geezers I did about the book was maybe one of your last pre-COVID
full broadcasts. It might have been. Yeah, it might have been.
It was like, breaks
around.
Yeah. So, fortunately, I've stood in my head about this. I'm going to sing Toby Keith's praises here for a few minutes because when all that happened, nobody really knew how long. I mean, you were already talking about the day 91, which turned out to be 191 more.
Why'd you have to remind me?
Yeah, it was right, though. It was the right idea.
Yeah.
But Toby's bunch kind of did that.
Yeah.
They said, look, we're going to do this. They were already gearing up to do a much larger production than they had done in previous years.
Yeah.
They already had a two-year touring model with it, where it would be a big out front push, and then this what is now this coming year, what would have been last year, just some cleanups, revisions, add a piece.
Yeah.
So that this thing could there was a fiscal thinking about it already. So they just said, fine, we're just gonna do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so they paid us to do video content, they built the set, they kept all their people on salary for as long as it took.
Which is wild. Yeah.
And so incredible.
He kept I'll sing his praises till I'm an old man. He kept us going.
Yeah.
Darkroom wouldn't be here today if Toby Keith didn't invest in us.
Yeah.
That's huge.
And there's other vendors in Nashville and in St. Louis who we were on the phone with, and they were literally telling us, I'm 2 weeks away from laying off my staff.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, don't, because Toby wants to pay you to build a set.
Wow. That's huge.
His entire team stayed on payroll the entire pandemic.
Wow.
Full benefits, health insurance, the whole nine. I mean, I can't sing that man's praises enough.
That's incredible.
And the smart business end of it, beyond just the human factor, and his willingness to take that outlay of cash for such a long period of time, is when it was time to go, even remotely close to going, we were so ahead of the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're done. We're ready.
Yeah.
We needed 3 production days, and we're out.
But, I mean, being, like, one of, really, the very earliest.
It was May.
I mean, was it the first full tour, full production?
There was a couple close behind it, but we were first out the
game. Yeah, yeah. So.
And, I mean, people at Bandit showed up to watch the truckload.
Really?
Just stood there and watched this truckload taking pictures.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was that kind of
amazing.
It's really happening.
Well, I remember when I did the Red Alert restart thing, how happy people were to be out working their ass off, putting lights on buildings for free, not getting paid to do it. You know, they were just really happy to put on their show gear and get out there and hang some lights and program some lights. It just made people happy again, you know. We're that kind of an industry.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, Bandit, with people taking pictures of trucks getting loaded.
So excited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
And they were great. I mean, Toby's bunch, you know, I've heard people say something, well, that was dangerous or that was stupid. They were very smart and strategic about everything they did. You know, we were very protected on the backstage area. There was vaccination rules for staff and vendors and everybody.
Yeah.
And they routed that thing in the initial stages in such a way that they were following the COVID dartboard.
Yeah.
So we did a lot in South Dakota, in Arizona. And, you know, all those early dates were in states that were open because they felt that was the surest chance that we'd actually get the show off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and I think Toby's probably also not a guy that's super soft or whatever. Like, he was going to do what he was going to do. Yeah, he was going to do what he was going to do, I feel like. And so he was probably the right artist to be the first one out the gate, you know, a very good...
Mike Golden Bandit said that, you know, he bet money it was either going to be Garth or Toby, and it was almost both at the same time.
Yeah, which is incredible.
He's like, those are the two that will start this up again.
So... tell me some of your challenges that you went through, especially for the first couple of shows, I'm guessing.
It's a lot of the same stories that you hear across the board. Stagehands.
Yeah.
Big-time local problems of just getting enough help.
Yeah.
And having them be vaccinated.
Yeah.
Especially that early on, because there weren't a lot. It wasn't, like, generally everywhere. It wasn't. You couldn't just go to CVS at that time. You still had to do it through a healthcare provider.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were some days where it was like, everybody's going to have to push a little harder from our staff because there wasn't enough crew guys. But that kind of rectified itself fairly quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to drive any trucks or anything yourself?
Well, there's still gear working, so I clearly did not drive a truck.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like I've talked to some production managers and some people, even... you know, just a couple of months ago who had shows out and were like, oh my God, this is so hard. It's so complicated. It's, you know, like, did you have to send any people home because they got sick or...
You know, Toby's Bunch was really amazing. Nobody got it.
Nobody. Wow.
Do you remember?
No one that I know got it.
Yeah. Wow. So I know, but for the first two months...
Once you get up above the vendor staff into the core crew, I think his core crew did a really good job of keeping themselves insulated and not putting themselves in situations where they could get it and understanding that, you know, we have to keep this bubble intact for this thing to work and be successful.
Yeah. Well, and the backstage was a complete bubble.
I mean,
before anybody really had invented the bubble, they were doing that already. They realized very quickly that it's like, we've got to keep control.
Yeah.
Of who's in this building.
Yeah, like locals don't eat with...
No, that it wasn't quite that distressed.
Because most tours are like that now. Like,
But the local guys were, you know, they had to have vaccine records, they had to do all that, they couldn't be on the call. Which also, because of where Toby was playing in the markets, caused some trouble for the promoters because IA was the only one demanding that everybody be vaccinated. So a local labor provider may not have had enough vaccinated people, so they have to go to the IA in the next city and get guys to come over just to fill out the call. Now, fortunately, Toby's show it's not that dramatically gigantic.
Okay.
That, you know, I mean, it's seven trucks, something like that.
So
It's manageable, you know. So it wasn't like they needed an army to do it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but... so, I mean, there was nothing where it was like, oh, my God, this thing's going to stop. Like, it's not going to continue on. Like, there weren't massive problems where you had, like, people out holding picket signs.
I never saw that.
You're evil. Yeah, I never saw that.
Oh, really?
I saw people that were really excited to see entertainment again.
Yeah.
And that was really... It was really heartwarming to be in a crowd of, like, 7,000 kids who were that excited to be at a show.
Yeah.
We did have to do... I know that there was a lot of effort that went into, of course this would be what we did. This show had a full operating bar in the middle of the arena floor with runway all around it.
Oh my goodness.
So that's what you really want to start up right after COVID is cramming a bunch of kids into a standing room pit.
Oh God.
So they did have to do a lot of work with that. It would vary market to market how many they could put in there.
Okay.
Sometimes we had to put an additional exit into the pit, and there was a piece of decking that Gallagher had built so that it could become another entry exit point. There was a lot of that stuff that had to happen.
Yeah. But
as far as anything really noticeable, like protesters, no. No, nothing.
Were there any venues where they couldn't sell the whole...
No.
They didn't limit sales on anything?
They did a good job of really routing it in such a way that they never had to go to him and say, hey, man, we're going to do this one today, but you're only going to have half the house.
You didn't just go back and forth from Texas to Florida?
Right.
I mean, they ping-ponged the country, but they...
It was
they
a lot of early ping-ponging.
They stayed in open markets, you know, Prescott, Arizona, and Rapid City, and just... All of these arenas that are you know, they're really great arenas, you know, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 kids fit inside of them. And they did a good job of routing him in such a way that they kept him going for a solid 6 months playing those markets.
Well, and outside Toby, you guys seem to be really busy. Like, you seem to, you know, I know designers who are really busy right now, and then I know guys like you know, Cosmo, thank God for Gateway. Because Cosmo wouldn't have work still, you know, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but his two acts are both, they decided early on they're not doing anything until 2022. But you guys just seem to be busier than a lot of people, especially on touring stuff.
Doobie Brothers was another one that carried through the pandemic.
Yeah.
They wanted to go ahead and get the set ready. They were, it was a little different because they were assembling a whole new thing. You know, Toby's Bunch is existing. They're all there.
Yeah.
You know, Doobie's was starting to build a whole operation. So they got as far as they could, but that was enough to kind of keep us through.
Right.
Same thing again. When it launched, we were already nine steps down the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when they went out in late August, it's like, yeah, we're ready.
Yeah. Yeah, the Doobies thing is cool. I mean, that's like 50th anniversary. Well, and one of the weird things about them going out so early or earlier than some was they're old. And
they're,
you know,
kind of ground zero for the...
Well, yeah, generally, those are the people who were really concerned about it, you know, like, and that was Aerosmith and AC/DC, Cosmo's guys. I know Alice Cooper for a long time. David Davidian would tell me, yeah, he ain't going out yet. He ain't going, and he's out now, but... Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was a little surprising that guys of, you know, sort of that danger, ground zero, whatever you want to call it, are willing to go out and do it. But
yeah, and you know, they, you know, that one was a little more official, so to speak, I guess is the right word.
Yeah.
They did have COVID compliance officers. Yeah. And they did the whole thing.
Yeah.
But even then, and then of course Michael McDonald got COVID.
Did he? With
triple bubbles and...
Oh, my goodness.
Every precaution known to man. I mean, when the band came in the building, you know, it was like locked down, you know.
Yeah.
They were trying their best to protect the band, and Michael just, he got it.
Yeah.
No symptoms, no, you know, he wasn't in any kind of discomfort or distress, but...
So how long did that shut things
down?
About
8-9 days, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They moved to half a dozen shows, and they went right back out.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you've got the right stuff, you can get rid of it pretty quickly, too, you know, like the Joe Rogan thing, you know, where I think the second day he tested negative. Was it the second day? I don't know.
I think it was, actually. Yeah,
like second day he tested negative. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's a...
Hooray for horse tranquilizers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've actually been pretty good about not talking about COVID all day today, and somehow we're sitting here talking about COVID. But
we're no help because we just did a panel on it this morning.
The whole thing.
Oh, did you really? What
COVID,
was that about?
COVID and the cost on the industry and the human cost of it, and it's
you
know, how hard it is to put on a show right now and how difficult it is to get staff and the whole thing.
Well, I know one, I won't say the name, but I know one particular production manager who I talked to him probably a month ago or something, and he said, I'm almost ready to quit. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I've been doing this 30 years, and I'm almost ready to quit doing what I'm doing because it's so hard. It's such a pain in the ass, and I just don't really need to be here. You know, I don't need to do it anymore, and it just isn't fun anymore.
It's a common story.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that have chosen that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I had minutes or two, you know, that were... I particularly remember Doobie Brothers. It was because we were rehearsing in L.A. and just all of the extra of being in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I was just like, gosh, is this really worth all this? Yeah. I mean, I want it to be fun again. And, you know, and then, of course, you start writing cues for a song, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is it. Okay, we're fine.
Well, I went to England a few weeks ago, and I've been to Europe twice now, but I went to England a few weeks ago, and I was saying to my girlfriend at one point, I'm like, this is not even worth it anymore to travel.
Right?
Like, it's such a pain in the ass to travel, you know, between... being, you know, 8 hours on a plane with a mask on or just all the stuff, you know.
Like,
and
how long can I make this bag of peanuts last so I don't have to put the mask on?
Yeah. Well, and at every stage of everything, it's become the excuse, too, you know. Oh, well, because of COVID, we can really suck. You know, our service can suck, our food can suck, our whatever can suck because of COVID, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. Yeah. I mean, not that anyone really is going, damn, I love COVID.
Right.
You know? But, you know, I was talking with, I think it was Chris Conti earlier today from PRG, and I think there's some good that came out of COVID. I think there's a lot of good that came, and maybe not necessarily for a design firm like yours.
Actually, yeah.
You know, but for, like, PRG came up with some ways to make themselves more efficient, a.k.a. more profitable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was talking about some prep stuff that they've done where it's taken, you know, 20 minutes of prep down to 2 or 3 minutes of prep. And just improving systems and processes to become more efficient and more cost effective and better and things like that. But I know I did that with my own company. You know, I completely changed my own company, and now I'm seeing the results of that, which are very good. So, you know, there is some good that came from it. And there's some people that got fired that didn't get rehired. You know, yeah. At some companies, and it's because, you know, some of those owners would never fire people because they were there for 25 years, and now they had a perfect opportunity to let people go, and then they just didn't hire them back in some cases. So it became a bit of a filter, you know, I guess, a big filter.
Yeah, I mean, we did the same thing when during the mythical 8 weeks. The 8 weeks to cancel or to flatten the curve that turned into 9 months. We sat down and we said, how do we get better at taking care of the non-sexy side of our business, right? Yeah. The renderings and the client pitches and the programming, that stuff's sexy.
Yeah.
Everybody loves to do that, and it's fun to do, and we're always staying on top of new technology.
Yeah.
How do I project manage better?
Yeah.
How do I interact with a production manager better or a third crew guy?
Yeah.
And what can we do to take our workflow and make that better? And we spent weeks trying
out.
Because we had them finally.
You know.
Let's look at different project management pipelines and how do I effectively integrate my vendors better? And, just different little widgets and gizmos that we normally wouldn't pay attention to that we got a chance to finally invest in.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of modernize the way Darkroom does business.
Well, suddenly you found yourselves with a little bit of time.
Exactly.
Right? There was that breath of air. It was like, okay, well, I'm going to make the most of this.
Yeah. I already watched Day Tiger 91. King twice.
Yeah.
You know, that really was, I loved that phrase for that reason. That's exactly what we did.
Well, you know, Wiseman and I used to talk about it on an almost daily basis. Like, you know, I'm not going to be the guy that just takes 6 months off.
I have never seen an episode of Tiger King.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. I mean, I did watch some shows that I might not have watched, but that was more about in my downtime of a few hours a day or whatever I decided to be downtime. I'm not going out to dinner, or I'm not going out to whatever.
And we're all working from the couch.
So. Yeah, exactly. I did before, though. You know, I've always been a remote, not always, but for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been a remote company. So I always kind of worked from the couch. So that didn't change. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that I'm sitting here leaning over talking into a fake plant. Or is it a real plant? It might be a real plant. It is real.
Well, there you go.
But these guys made me expand my massive audio empire here and add a third microphone, and I didn't have anything to mount it to. And so it's clipped to a plant.
Hey, here's a house plant.
Here's a house plant.
Speaking to the flower, Senator.
Yeah. So
no,
what else?
We're not recording.
What else is going on? What's exciting?
Next door, Mr. Manilow came back again.
There he is.
Back on his feet. We're getting ready to do his Christmas version of that show.
So there's another less than youthful guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who said, I'm going back to work and I'm doing this thing.
And it was the same thing. They're very, they're backstage. They still do some kind of meet and greets, but they're very controlled, very limited. But it was the same kind of thing. It's like we're locking down the backstage. Of course, everybody's vaccinated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
That's the first time I've heard of a meet and greet, though. Like, nobody's doing
it. It's an uber selective thing.
Yeah.
And the people that are going to it, it's not just random people.
Yeah.
These are people that have purchased a ticket, filled out a health questionnaire.
Yeah. And they're super high rollers or something. Like
fans spend a lot of money to mm-hmm. benefit the charity.
Yeah.
He's got a charities thing that.
Yeah.
Manilow
That's
Music
cool.
Fund.
Was there any trouble on that? Like, did any of the.
No, even the hotel. I mean, the hotel you could see was running on half a thruster to try to keep everything looking. It was hard on the hotel staff. You could just get the sense it's like there's not enough housekeepers, there's not enough security teams, all that kind of stuff was kind of limited. But but everybody just opened and we were back.
Yeah.
And it was That's unbelievable.
Cool. And he was nice to go back to because he was the last thing we did before the world
shut down.
We were in the middle of a rebuild next door. and literally next door. And the plan was you're going to come out Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We have four dark days. We'll send you home.
Yeah.
Come back the next week and you'll finish the design.
Or make that a year and a half later.
Yeah.
And we on Monday we got home and it was literally like, we don't know when you're coming back now.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was 18 months. Yeah, 18 months of the day.
Yeah,
was he pretty happy to be back?
He was thrilled.
Over the moon.
Yeah. I mean, he's a spry guy for 79.
Yeah.
He's
79.
Yeah, he was a fireball of energy on that stage.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just like an adrenaline rush for him.
That's cool.
You know, everybody thinks he just sits at the piano anyway, and it's actually an incredibly physical show.
Really?
He's on his feet. I don't even think he finished. One song he plays completely at the piano. Otherwise, mm-hmm. he's everywhere.
Yeah.
And climbing up on bridges and stairs and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And he just tore into it like he had just stopped the day before.
Wow. It was
really impressive.
And did it sell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
It's selling phenomenally well.
Yeah. I have a friend who's a performer, was a performer here locally. He's a hypnotist. And he decided not to go back, you know, and it had a lot to do with sort of what the new Las Vegas looks like, you know, like if you've walked down the strip at all, it's a very different clientele than it used to be. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, we were actually sitting having a drink outside on a patio thing, and he's like, Marcel, just take a look. These people aren't buying show tickets, you know, so I'm not going to come back. And like he was telling me, so there were three hypnotists in town. He was one of the three. Two didn't go back, one did. So there's only one hypnotist. Where there were three that were filling rooms every night, there's now one. And he said he played to like 15 people or something a couple nights ago. So, you know,
The interesting thing about Manilow is, for his entire career, external things have no impact on him.
Yeah.
You know, he gets slammed in the early days, you know, he gets slammed in the press for being small. Didn't matter. He sold tickets like crazy.
Yeah.
Then they wrote him off for a number of years in the 90s. Oh, that's it. And no hits. And still selling tickets.
Yeah.
So he just has this way of just riding above all of that. And that audience is so loyal.
Yeah.
That they're going to stand with him.
Yeah.
And they've curated that audience over the years. It's mothers and daughters. And, it's a lot.
Well, it's funny because you were very gracious and gave my girlfriend, I won't say gave me tickets, to see Barry
during the pandemic, yes.
It was around a trade show. I was coming to Vegas. It might have been Infocom in 2020, and it shut down like right before that, and I had to cancel the trip and stuff, and didn't get to see him. Darn.
Well, you know, you're in trouble because he renewed for two more years.
Well, yeah. Have I told you I'm not coming back to Vegas in a bigger?
There's 100 more shows on the books than there was before all that stuff.
You know what? I'll sit and watch it just because it'll make her happy. You know, she'll be like,
you're going to be one of those people, because those are the people that always go, oh, I don't want to be here. And they're the ones screaming the loudest and waving the glow stick.
Yeah.
I'm just warning
you. I'm just saying, don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. I've never been a massive fan of Barry Manilow. But, no, that's cool. That's awesome. Well, you know, I appreciate you guys taking a little bit of time out of the day to come over. I always like to talk to you and hear what you're up to and whatever. So I appreciate you doing it.
Thank you, as always.
I know you're probably sick of talking.
No, not at all.
No? Are you here tomorrow or just today?
We're going home.
You're done? Yeah. Have you been to the Circle Bar?
Oh, the one on the floor?
The big round truss thing next to the act?
I walked through it. I was a little like, I don't know if I like this or not.
Well, it's not really a Circle Bar.
It's not really
like,
the Circle Bar.
People were so happy that there was going to be this Circle Bar, and then now I hear people critiquing it. Well, it's not really the Circle Bar. Like
what I thought was funny is that I heard a bunch of people this morning going, you know, I've never gone to bed that early at LDI because they all had their little Circle Bar moment up till 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
and they were in bed.
Yeah, no, I wish I would have followed that, but I ended up going out to dinner with a big group of people, and I was out way too late, and the wine was flowing like water, and somehow I got very inebriated on wine, and I don't feel that great today. So,
we've seen that movie. We know how it is.
Yeah, we all have, right? All right, guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
bother a girl like you. You get your cake and you eat it too. You're my sweet pea.